Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Mid-8. 26. Sevo likely heard the hoofbeats first, but he was not the first to act. While the audience's eyes were on Cedra's performance or their dinner plates, Sevo looked towards the sky. Spectral horsemen, at least 36, rode through the night, their horses' light green, emaciated hooves beat against the air like it was earth. It was the Wild Hunt, the Witcher knew. Ethereal and ephemeral riders of unknown origins, but almost certainly from another plane of existence. Tales of the hunt crossing barriers into this world were commonplace, but in truth, the hunt likely only appeared a handful of times every decade, usually visiting for only a few hours before disappearing. They were a natural phenomena, the rational side of Zevo's mind told him, akin to a blizzard or an earthquake. No one could predict when or how the Wild Hunt appeared, but anecdotal evidence suggested they're more prevalent during the 8 holy days that rounded the year, times when the boundaries between worlds were softened. The Wild Hunt's sole purpose, it seemed, was to abduct. For where the hunt rode, disappearances followed. Dozens of men, women, and children are spirited away by the riders, seemingly at random, to an unknown fate. Shit luck they're riding here, then, Sevo thought. He prepared to raise some sort of alarm, but the sentries beat him to it. A horn's bleat blasted through the air, temporarily drowning out the rumbling thunder of hooves.
Wild Hunt!
Cedra, who was performing her finest ballad on the stage, saw the riders next. Her aesthetic eye noted their tattered red cloaks that fluttered in the wind, contrasting their sickly green armor. Having had first-hand experience with specters in the town of Undying, the troubadour felt a stab of panic in her heart, sharp as the knife put to her throat during Signet's ritual. Time slowed as Cedra watched her captive audience turn their heads, one by one, towards the sky. Someone in the crowd, a dwarf, jumped out of his chair and bolted towards the eastern end of Kalmek. That, of course, started the panic. Before Cedra could catch her breath, her audience was in an absolute frenzy, leaping out of their seats and scattering in all directions. The mixture of panicked shrieks and cries for help nearly drowned out the hoofbeats. Nearly. The rumbling intensified the closer the Wild Hunt got, and they were getting very close. Cedra didn't wait to see the pandemonium unfold any further. She leapt off the stage, landing poorly on her feet. She stumbled, afraid she sprained an ankle. She fell to the ground, scraping her hands on the stone. A troubadour's hands are their life, Circe the Loquacious, the continent's finest bard, had once told Cedra. Well, that and their voice. Do well not to damage either. Cedra didn't give a shit about her hands at the moment. She needed to hide, lest the hunt kidnap her. No one knew where the Wild Hunt took their victims, and she had no intention of finding out. Dozens of townsfolk sprinted to and fro, obscuring her vision. A wild-eyed merchant collided into Cedra, slamming his knee into her temple and tumbling over her. Stars burst in Cedra's eyes as she hit the ground. She groaned and tried to roll under the stage to avoid being trampled. Someone gripped Cedra under her armpits before she could regain her senses and hauled her up. It was Sir Silas of Edern, her date to the festival. His brown hair was matted to his forehead, and he was panting, but his eyes had none of the blind animal panic that surrounded the town square.
"Come on," Silas said, drawing his sword. "We'll have to get to the manor. Can you walk?"
Cedra could, and they pushed their way through the crowd. She didn't see him, but Carmagnola shouldered past the two, trying to find his own way towards the manor. He didn't see Cedra either. He tried to focus on what was right in front of him.
crowds of people stumbling over each other, shouting over each other, pushing each other, pulling each other, helping each other, hindering each other. And above them loomed the hunt. The horsemen rode right over Calmec's stone walls, higher than even the cathedral's spire. A chill passed through Carmagnola's body, as if he was suddenly racked with fever. His sewn throat bobbed, and he coughed up phlegm. His hearing sounded as it did when he was underwater, distorted and disjointed. Each hoofbeat seemed to rattle his very bones. A man next to Carmagnola doubled over and puked his half-digested chicken dinner. A young woman covered her ears and shrieked as the horseman galloped overhead. Carmagnola covered his own head and crouched behind an overturned chair, fearing that one of the horsemen would trample him. "This wasn't rational," a small voice in his head said, as the wild hunt was far above him. But he crouched and hid anyway. Nearby, Ethramel was being crushed by the wave of humanity that pushed towards the eastern end of town. The sorcerer hoped to take refuge in the unkempt beard, and it seemed everyone else had a similar idea. Impulse told him to clear a path with fire, but he knew that was the fastest way to get murdered, so he let the wave crush him and push him forward. The wild hunt were rolling over Calmec like thunderclouds, emitting ghastly shrieks. On the surface, it appeared they didn't care about the town and were simply passing through. But Ethramel knew the fuckery of specters firsthand, and didn't want to make any assumptions. The unkempt beard was, predictably, filled to the brim with dwarves. Ethramel was lucky enough to get inside, though he was allowed little breathing room. Most of the candles had been extinguished, and his eyes struggled to adjust to the darkness. When they did, he saw what he expected. A mass of huddled dwarves, anxiously waiting for the hoofbeats and rumbling to pass. He practically smelled the fear mixed in with the stench of body odor and spilled ale. "Has anyone seen Godru?" a woman shouted above the den. "Oh gods, has anyone seen Godru?"
"My ankle, blast it!"
another dwarf snarled.
"This is the end. Death's surely come for us."
"I lost my son. Has anyone seen him? He was wearing a green tunic."
Ethramel tried to ignore the panicked prattle. He spotted Zevo of Kavir in the corner of the tavern. He wasn't hard to find. The Witcher towered over everyone. Ethramel decided any companionship was better than none, and pushed his way through the crowd. He stopped when he saw a dwarf step in front of Zevo and jab a finger at him.
"And what do you think you're doing here, Witcher?" he asked.
His voice was a little slurred with alcohol and a little shaky with fear.
"Waiting for the hunt to pass, same as you," Zevo replied, as flat as ever.
"Sure, sure," the dwarf said loudly.
Others started to quiet and witness the exchange.
"Just seems like a real coincidence, doesn't it? A witcher comes to Calmec, and a few days later, the wild hunt rides through town."
Zevo shrugged.
"An unfortunate coincidence, I'll grant you that."
He said no more, and the dwarf shook his head and pointed again at the witcher.
"Wanna know what I think? I think you brought the wild hunt here so they could steal more of our children. Maybe you and Grenham was working together."
Before he could stop himself, Ethramel pushed through the crowd and said, "The wild hunt's been known to appear during the solstice, you clod. How would a witcher be able to summon a hunt anyway?" The dwarf spun around. His eyes were bloodshot and twitching.
"I don't remember asking you anything, elf. Keep your nose out of our business."
"We have no business," Zevo said. "But all the same, I think I should leave. It sounds as if the wild hunt is past."
The dwarf stepped aside to create a path for Zevo. Ethramel thought to stay in the relative safety of the unkempt beard, but decided any companionship was better than none, and he followed. A similar panicked atmosphere had gripped the cathedral. Jeremiah and Mother Lana had shepherded as many townsfolk as they could inside, and the place was packed with chattering humans, and almost all of them shouted at Mother Lana, who stood at the altar with Jeremiah and her acolytes.
"How did this happen? The eternal fire is supposed to protect us! Did the hunt abduct anybody? By the flame, I left my grandmother at home.
What can we do? They'll come back and kill us all!
We're sinners who deserve death.
Are they still here? Will they burn down the cathedral?"
Jeremiah cleared his throat and stepped forward.
"Quiet yourselves!"
His voice, while booming, did little to quell the crowd. He was an outsider, after all. Why should they listen to some upjumped craftsman? Mother Lana also took a step forward and cupped her hands around her mouth.
"Quiet! I can't hear anything over all the noise. Shut your mouths and listen!"
The crowd listened to her, and an eerie silence settled over the cathedral. Lana said to Jeremiah, "If you actually had something to say, best say it now." Jeremiah shook his head and motioned for Lana to continue.
"Please, they obviously prefer to hear from you."
Lana sighed and faced the crowd, as if delivering a sermon. "I need you to take a moment to collect your senses. What we witnessed was not natural or of this world.
We must be prepared for whatever comes next, be it specters or sorcerers or the prophesied era of sword and axe. So take this moment to collect yourselves, because the eternal fire and humanity depends on you. The crowd remained silent for a whole minute. Then, slowly but surely, they began to talk quietly amongst themselves. Jeremiah clapped lightly. I think it best, Mother Lana said to him, if you leave for Mahakam as soon as you can. The Church of the Eternal Fire will need as much help as it can get.
I think that's best as well.
If you reach the mountains, ask for Sir Isaac of the Order of the Flaming Rose. He's the head of security for the Redanian delegation. Show him the letter I wrote up, and he can help. Lana patted Jeremiah on the shoulder. Best of luck, Jeremiah. The church is fortunate to have found you.
And I it, Jeremiah finally managed to stammer. Take care of yourself, Lana.
He pushed through the sedated crowd and made his way towards the cracked Chalice Inn, where he had stabled Ingot. The Wild Hunt had passed, no doubt riding through the Mahakam Mountains and into the kingdom of Temeria. Kamek streets, crowded with fleeing townsfolk not 15 minutes before, were now nearly empty and quiet as a tomb. Only a few brave souls left their shelter and stepped outside. Zevo and Ethramel were two such souls. They came from the eastern side of town, heading towards the cracked chalice.
I see we have similar ideas, Jeremiah said as he approached.
Zevo grunted. And what idea is that?
That we should have left Kalmek sooner rather than later, Ethramel answered.
He glanced nervously around. Dwan loved to find someone to blame whenever something supernatural occurs. I'd rather not be around to see it. I think, a voice said from an alleyway, I know what might have caused this. Tabek approached the group slowly. He was wearing clothes that were a touch too large for him. Jeremiah and Ethramel thought his eyes looked half mad, and a thin sheen of sweat covered his face. Oh, I didn't think the Wild Hunt needed any explanation, Zevo said with a raised eyebrow. Either way, it's probably best we save it for the road.
Well, let's not waste time then, Ethramel said, heading towards the stables. Best get on the road before it gets full dark. Where are the others? Jeremiah asked. Have you seen them?
No, Zevo and Ethramel said at once. I just flew here, Tabek said, shaking his head.
We should leave without them, Ethramel said. It does no good to dawdle. The doctor and the troubadour have been hobnobbing with the nobles anyway. They can take care of themselves. You're not wrong.
Carmagnola and Cedra approached from the center of town. Carmagnola was hobbling some, and Cedra was sporting a bruise on the scarred side of her face. The doctor carried an orange tabby cat, and he grinned at the troubadour.
I told you they'd all try to run.
Good timing, Zevo said. Things have changed. We're leaving Kalmek before it gets me or Ethramel killed. Will you be joining us? Carmagnola shot Ethramel a glare, but nodded.
Yes, I will.
No, Cedra said. It took a moment for the surprise to register. Zevo, used to such interactions, was the first to speak. Why?
Because you're still being hunted by Nilfgaardians, Cedra thought to say. Because I still wake up with nightmares from my experience at the Town of Undying. Because you're all selfish and apt to get me killed. Because I don't trust any of you.
I wish to stay in Kalmek a little while longer, she said. I've made some good connections in Lord Haemon's court, and think it could provide fruitful opportunities for me. Zevo, who was cursed to part ways with everyone who ever traveled with him on the path, nodded.
I understand, and wish you the best of luck.
Ethramel waved to Cedra, but said nothing as he headed for the stables. Jeremiah stepped forward and held out his hand.
I respect your choice, Cedra. Keep yourself safe, and write a few ballads about us.
Oh, I will, Cedra said with a laugh. Carmagnola rubbed his eyes and repeated Jeremiah's words. He was never good at goodbyes, doubted he ever would be. It was best to keep moving, and hope that goodbye didn't come back to bite you in the ass. He had learned that the hard way from Beatrix.
I hope our paths will cross again soon.
I'm sure they will, Cedra said. Then she nodded and left. 27. Ethramel listened to Tabek's words intently. He found the Nilfgaardian fascinating. Tabek was as scarred and burned as the sorcerer, and he also had a touch of the power. Tabek's story only confirmed this. He spoke when they had put a healthy distance between themselves and Kalmek. The sun had set, but the moon was bright and the path to Mahakam was clear. Few would be traveling on Midate, especially one as momentous as this. Carmagnola had expressed concern about the Nilfgaardian raiders finding them, but Ethramel said that he had taken care of that problem and left it at that,
because he didn't know if he had actually taken care of that problem. He had Colden Opteld's letter in his bag, but it wasn't worth much if the Kedweni delegation didn't reach Mahakam. So he listened to Tabek's story intently, and watched the roads just as intently. "I believe," Tabek said to Zevo, but everyone listened, "that the Wild Hunt was drawn to this forest by the Witch in the Woods. I stumbled across an old ritual circle, right where the Wild Hunt first appeared. The forests weren't dying from the Andrega infestation, Zevo. The witch was drawing power from the forest, weakening the boundaries between this plane of existence and theirs. It made it easier for the hunt to break through."
"Okay," Zevo said after some time. "Let's say that this is true. The question is, why would this witch want to draw the hunt here?"
"I don't know," Tabek admitted. He scratched at his arm. "But I don't think it's the last we'll see of this. I fear others may be practicing this same ritual, drawing the Wild Hunt to them." Tabek paused, and Ethramel listened even more intently. "I believe it is our duty to investigate this matter further." Zevo barked laughter. Jeremiah joined in and said,
"I'm afraid it's none of my business. Such things go far above my head."
"Agreed,"
Carmignola added. He held Otto, the orange tabby, in his lap as he rode.
"And how would we be able to stop the Wild Hunt?"
"We couldn't," Zevo said. "The riders we see are likely shades of their true form, a weakened projection that can't do much physical harm to us, but we can't hurt them either, any more than we can cut a shadow." The Witcher's words seemed to settle the debate for the time being. Ethramel had to admit that his curiosity was piqued. In the past, such matters dealing with the conjunction of the spheres and other interplanar activity would have been investigated by the Lodge of Sorceresses, a conclave of sorceresses who secretly met in the north for years. But the lodge had been dissolved, and its sorceresses forced into hiding, so it was difficult to say who would take Tabek up on this task. Ethramel heard a whistling sound, and all thoughts of the Wild Hunt left his mind. An arrow thudded into the road in front of him, and he reined Enye back. His companions did the same. Ethramel looked to his left, towards the shadowy Mahakam Mountains. The sorcerer held out a hand and said to the others, "I think that was meant for me. Wait here a moment." He spurred Enye on before he got a response. Out from the darkness of the mountain crept five shapes. Ethramel recognized the first who stepped forward, bow in hand. "Strange finding you on the road so late, kin," Alu said. "How long have you been hiding on the road?" Ethramel asked. "Since yesterday, like you told Shenny. Where are you headed?"
"To Mahakam." "You were too late, kin. The Kedweni delegation left for the mountains last night. We missed them."
Ethramel didn't know if this was true, but he didn't see any Kedweni at the Mid-Eight Festival, and saw no reason to vacillate now. Alu raised an eyebrow. "Oh, and who might have tipped Kedwin off?"
"Take a wild guess," Ethramel said, gesturing towards his companions on the road. "The Dwan you let go, the same one who questioned you at the tavern. He likely let the Duke know that his life was in danger if he stayed."
One of the hooded elves stepped forward, gently pushing Alu back. Her voice was familiar.
"Do you want to know what I think, kin?"
Ethermel's stomach sank.
"I'm sure you're going to tell me, Shenny."
Shenny pushed her hood back to reveal a face that had not seen good sleep in many nights. Distrust was marked on her face as clear as Ethermel's burn scars. "I think you had a choice, and you picked your side. Why else would you be trying to slip away with your Dwan companions in the middle of the night?
So I can reach the delegation and do what you failed to do," Ethermel snarled.
He didn't like the guilt rising from his heart. Rage was the best way to keep such things in check.
"And what would you have us do?" Shenny asked with a sneer. "Head to your wizard's tower in Lawncough, I suppose?"
Ethramel shrugged.
"Do what you wish. Keep fighting. Rebuild your strength. Live if you want, or die. It's no concern of mine."
Ethramel regretted his words immediately. "It's no concern of mine." He would take it back if he could. Would spend an hour explaining why he did what he did, and that he really had no choice. He would prostrate himself and ask for their forgiveness. But it was not in Ethermel's nature to turn back, so he let his final words to Shenny hang in the air. "It's no concern of mine." "I should have known you were full of shit." Shenny spat on the ground in front of Ethramel. "Go then, traitor. Leave your scars elsewhere, if you even can. But don't show your face to us anymore." Ethramel bristled, but didn't have the energy to lash out. It would do no good to squabble with kin, especially on such a holy day as Mid-Eight. Shenny and her commando would either live and grow, or fight and dwindle to nothing. Ethermel had seen it with the Vryhead Brigade, and he had seen it with dozens of Squirtle commandos across the north. What was one more?
Ethramel told himself he didn't care. The elves let him ride back to the road. As he did, Carmagnola asked in a mocking voice,
"What's the matter? Did things not work out between you and the squirrels?"
Ethramel chose not to answer. It would do no good to squabble, especially on such a holy day as Midate. 28. When all was said and done, three people had been spirited away from Kalmek. Two humans, both male, ages 24 and 52, and one female dwarf, age 103. Sedra learned this over a handful of days, from a handful of nobles and townsfolk, as Kalmek tried to put everything back together. Rebuilding, Sedra learned from Sir Silas, was a difficult task. Lord Haemon lost face with both the townsfolk and his own court of nobles. How could he let such a tragedy befall Kalmek? It would have been relatively simple to point out that the Wild Hunt, by all accounts and legends, was a random occurrence, and Kalmek just happened to be unlucky. But that no one said this in Lord Haemon's defense spoke volumes. The Midsummer Feast, of course, ended early. Lord Haemon had instructed everyone to return to their homes for safety, only to ask them to return to work the next day. Only a few merchants opened shop. The forge had not been relit, and one by one the nobles started to leave the town. On the third day of this, Sir Silas asked Sedra if she also wanted to leave. The troubadour did, in truth. She was glad she didn't travel with her old companions, for only danger and misery seemed to line their path, but she had to admit she was disappointed her newest patronage dissolved almost immediately. A few knights are heading north along the Mahakam Mountains, Sir Silas said, to the Pontar Valley. Word is a rebellion's brewing there. Might be we can find good work fighting them. Might be you could find good work there as well. Back on the road, Sedra thought, but was glad it would be with Silas. The knight had utterly surprised her. He was quick to action when the Wild Hunt appeared, and the only reason Sedra reached Lord Haemon's manor. And he was an excellent conversationalist, far better than her old companions. So the choice was simple for Sedra. 10 Edernian knights departed in all. Sedra's horse Lavender was antsy to get back on the road, despite her exhausting, week-long voyage to Kalmek. Sedra understood her horse's excitement. The open road had always excited Sedra, and while it had lost much of its appeal in recent weeks, some of the old allure still held her. They rode north for most of the day. Sir Silas shared with Sedra how Duke Edend of Gwenlick decided to stay in Kalmek for 2 days after the Midsummer Feast, despite not taking part in the festivities. And when they departed yesterday, they took a less direct route through the mountains. "I can never figure why," Silas said, rubbing his stubbly chin. "Seems strange, does it not?" "It does," Sedra said. She did not tell him that the letter she delivered from Ethramel likely factored into it. Sedra didn't read the letter at all, and saw no reason to bring it up. "I trust they'll reach the summit in time." "And with luck, broker some kind of alliance," Silas said. He struggled to rein his horse, Archie. Lavender was also shying away, as if trying to turn back. Sedra held the reins tight and glanced at the forest and the basin to their right. Perhaps some Andregar were nearby. Sedra had heard there was quite an infestation down there. "Oh, Bassard," Silas said to the knight leading the company. "Do you spot anything up ahead? Something set Archie off." "Nothing I can see," Bassard called back. "Naught but rocks and more rocks." An arrow thudded into Bassard's throat. The knight gave a tiny burble before sliding off his horse. Another arrow quickly took the second knight in the column, who was struggling to draw his sword from its scabbard. Sir Silas drew his sword and wheeled Archie around. Sedra did the same. There were a dozen elves behind them, dressed in forest green. A few were mounted on horses, and all carried bows, swords, and axes. They were surrounded. "Scoriatel," Sedra thought. One of the elves in the rear urged a horse forward, and for a moment Sedra thought it was Enna, the brothel owner in the town of Undying. But that couldn't be. She motioned to another mounted elf with a squirrel's tail hanging from his cap. "First decent party we've seen, eh?" The elf with the squirrel tail in his cap nodded. "They're no delegation, but I suppose they'll have to do." "Kill them all," the she-elf said. The elves charged forward, letting out a bloodthirsty cry. Silas and a few knights rode towards the elves in the rear, swords drawn. Sedra ducked as an arrow whizzed past her ear. She watched a knight cut an elf down with his sword before trampling another that tried to dive out of the way. Lavender snorted and tried to spin around, but was unsure of what to do. Sedra felt the same way. She drew her knife and stayed low. Silas was knocked off his horse from a mounted elf, but managed to recover and cut the elf's thigh open. Sedra heard screaming behind her, and the ring of steel on steel. She knew that she would do no good in this fight. It would be best to find cover. she wheeled Lavender around and spurred the horse forward. That's when the she-elf took Cedra in the back of the head with an axe.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from The Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.